like a demon.
That was brownish, gray, and white.
A righteous soul temporarily possesses a body.
The Dybbuk box.
This evil thing.
Touché, sir.
The Rougarou.
It has potential to be dangerous.
The Wild Hunt.
There's something large crawling out of the water.
That's just between me and the feds.
Baba Yaga.
I'm Todd.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Bill.
Welcome to Stranger Happenings Podcast.
Before we get started with today's episode, we want to acknowledge that the last few weeks have been really tough with a lot of difficult things happening all around the world. And we want to remind you to please take care of yourselves and those that you love, and to be kind to others. If you're struggling and feel unable to reach out to a friend or family member, we hope that you'll consider texting the crisis text line by texting SIGNS, S-I-G-N-S, to 741-741, or call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or seek out their crisis chat at suicidepreventionlifeline.org/chat. You matter. You are loved. Please take care of yourselves. And thanks for listening. Welcome to our podcast. And then it was silent.
Well, hello, guys. I don't know if you guys know this, but our mascot of friend Biggie Feats is actually in the studio today, and he wanted to bring us a surprise. He found a cryptid from the northern woods even stranger than him. He said we should probably keep 6 feet apart at least, because this guy might have some diseases of fleas. His name's Jake. Jake, are you there?
I am.
Might Jake, have some diseases. Today? Might.
Well, I mean.
Hey, come on, guys. I got medication for that.
Yeah. There you go. I figured if I don't say he does have it, we won't violating HIPAA.
Yeah, I gave up my HIPAA rights anyway, so we're good.
Jake's a good friend of ours. We know him from the podcast world, and Jake actually has his own podcast. Jake, you want to tell us about it?
Well, first, I just want to say thanks for having me on. It's an honor to come on with you guys. You guys have
we're
an awesome
so happy
show.
To
I love
have
it.
You on.
Oh, yeah, we're you. Glad to have you, man.
Yes. Yeah. We love your show.
Yeah, I'm excited. Great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited for the topic tonight. But my show is called the Flask at Hand Podcast, and basically it's a science, history, and whiskey. And what we do is we taste and review a whiskey at the beginning of every episode, and then we talk about a specific science or history topic. And so if you don't like whiskey, just fast forward through it, and you can listen to some cool topics. I mean, anything ranging from Vikings, pirates, to can sound waves heal you, all sorts of cool stuff like that. Dreams, we touch on a lot of different stuff. So, yeah, come take a listen if you want. And I guess that's it. Yeah.
So, can sound waves heal you? Are you using them?
Well, it's. No, they don't work on STDs, unfortunately.
Bill, you're going to have to go to a new doctor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jake gave it to me, so Jake's paying for him.
Whoa. I'd give him to you again, big guy.
That is a misrepresentation.
That's love.
True love. So can sound waves heal you, Jake?
Well, I think it's subjective. Okay. Yes, seems to be the consensus among a certain group of doctors and scientists, and no, among another group of doctors and scientists, as everything seems to be. But yeah, there is some studies that show you can heal brain cells with vibrations, basically.
Oh,
so with sound.
That's very interesting. Cool. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite episodes. I actually listen to that one a few times because I find that topic so interesting.
Yeah,
it really is.
Well, I haven't listened to that one, but I will now.
I love how you rate riskies too, so it's always funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We try to, and that's another thing about our show is we try to make people laugh. So we like to give you some information and have a good time while doing it. But our biggest goal at the end of the day is if you listen to the show and you're having a shitty day or whatever, and you get, and you laugh afterwards, our job's done. You know what I mean? That's
the how we feel.
Yeah. That's kind of how we, that is how we feel too. We just want you guys to laugh and.
How's everybody's weekend going? Is everyone having a 3-day weekend, or is it just me?
I'm having a 3-day weekend.
I've got a 2-day weekend, but that's okay. It's okay. So check this out. So for those of you that don't know, I have 3-year-old twins, and one of them here lately, he keeps telling me that there's a yellow monster in the tree in the neighbor's backyard. We can see it from some of the windows in the house, you know, and he keeps like, he's been going on about this for like a few weeks now. Right. Mm-hmm. And the other day he tells me that like, not only is it a big yellow monster, but it's got big eyes. And like, I keep looking out there, you know, trying to figure out what he's looking at. And I can't figure anything out. I don't see anything, you know? Well, so yesterday I'm out in the yard doing yard work, which I do yard work constantly. You can ask Bill and Jamie. It's like my thing.
It's true.
And so I'm out there and I find this massive pile of poop, right? And it's like, like we have a dog, but she's tiny, you know, she's a little dachshund Yorkie mix. And it's like, there's no way. I've seen her poops. She has these little tiny poops. So I'm starting to think we have some sort of a cryptid in the neighborhood
that has
giant poops in my yard, and I'm going to start watching for footprints and stuff. I'll have to keep you guys updated.
I think you need to have your kid tell you when he sees it. Be like, let me know when you see it out there.
Yeah, well, so they're still kind of struggling with speech. They go to therapy for it, but mm-hmm. you know, like they're getting there. But sometimes it's hard for him to like convey, you know, feelings and stuff.
Maybe he could like knock on the window.
Yeah.
Like maybe something like that to get your attention.
Yeah. Just figure out a code word for him to yell. You know, I don't know.
Yellow.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, where you live, it could be a mountain lion.
I mean, maybe. So I live in West Virginia. It's one of those states where, you know, they say there are no mountain lions. I'd say there probably are at least a few.
We have.
Just because there's so many sightings all the time. But,
right.
But I mean, I live in kind of an urban area. Like, I don't know. Maybe. That's kind of scarier than, like, what I was thinking.
Hold on.
You know.
Todd, you know what's funny? Go ahead, Jamie.
Todd, have we looked into this possibly being Jake sitting in a tree watching you?
No, I didn't think about that.
It's not me, because I tell you what, that ticket, that plane ticket is way too damn expensive for me to fly all the way to West Virginia and take shits in his tree. It's too far. Can I swear on here? I forgot. You guys probably
absolutely swear on here.
Jake just sent me a text message saying that, Todd, your lights are on in your kitchen. Okay.
That's why I'm so glad I live in the middle of an industrial building. None of y'all will ever find me. Thank goodness.
Jamie, I have like 5 to 6 friends who live within like 10 minutes of you.
I know you do, but that doesn't mean you're going to figure out which window is mine.
No. You know what's funny, though, is the mountain lion. I don't know if I've ever told this to any of you, maybe Jake, but 10, 15, no, actually, it's probably been close to 20, 25 years ago. Someone thought they saw an actual lion by where I live now.
Oh, lion or tiger. Interesting.
And that was like, they're crazy. Next day it happens again, but it's a national park ranger who has a degree in zoology. Ends up being, there's a guy down the street who's a drug dealer, and he had one to guard his stash, and he got loose.
Oh,
it
snap.
Really was an actual African jungle cat.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Isn't one of those, like, big cat breeders, weren't they in Ohio?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There was one, close to Chillicothe, I think.
Well, okay. There was actually two times. One happened by me, and another one happened by Chillicothe, I think. The one by me, actually, it was a tragedy. I knew the responding officers.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
They said it was one of the most, unfortunately, a child died in that one. And they said it was one of the most horrific scenes they've ever seen. And two, 3 decades later, they said they still can see when they close their eyes sometimes. They said it was so horrible.
That's
so these guys,
that's awful.
These guys were Marine vets, combat, the cops who retired from law enforcement. They said it was the worst of all the things they ever saw.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't play with big cats.
Yeah, just get a house cat.
Just get a house cat.
That's right.
They're just weird.
Everyone needs a little pussy in their life, but you gotta watch what you get. So, what's the topic today?
I am so excited for this topic.
This was your idea.
This was my idea, because I have always been fascinated by Jack Parsons. Rocket engineer, chemist, occultist. Everyone focuses a whole lot on his orgies and sex life.
So much cum.
I texted Jake and I was like, are you ready to talk about engineer and sex enthusiast Jack Parsons?
Hey, sex, drugs, and rocket science, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. That's my new tagline, sex, drugs, and rocket science.
I don't know if you guys know this. The term, it's not rocket science. We always say to mean something's easy. Before Jack Parsons, it's not rocket science meant it was something hard.
True.
Very that true. Saying changed because of this man.
Right. That's like the craziest thing about all this is like, and we'll get into it. Like, there were many times where they actually avoided using the term rocketry or referring to rockets because there was such a negative connotation associated with it, especially in the realm of science.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is
crazy. It's pretty wild.
Right?
Yeah.
And now we know, like, he was literally one of the smartest men of the time period of probably even now. 20th century. And he was rubbing elbows with other amazingly smart individuals.
I have a list of them as we go through.
I do too.
I think he was rubbing more than elbows with some of these guys.
Definitely rubbing more than elbows.
There's at least one of them who was definitely rubbing more than the elbow.
Yeah. There were some streams crossing. There was a whole lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
But it is really amazing the circle of like notable people that are part of this guy's life. It's insane.
Yes.
It's a spider web of just like world changing people.
Absolutely.
If you made this story up as a movie, somebody would tell you, you got to take some of that out. It's not believable.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, there is a TV show.
There is.
Yeah.
It came out in 2018, I think.
I think it's called Strange Angel or Stranger Angel. Yeah.
Strange Angel. Yes. It's called Strange Angel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's based on a biography of his life. And the guy in it looks really close to him. And that's the thing that stuck out to me about him is like all of these amazing people in like Jake said, the web of his life valued him so much. And it's so crazy to me that all these people valued him and saw his like life contributions to now kind of have him be like excluded from so much of the things that he like ignited. He's excluded from the history of NASA and not completely from Jet Propulsion Laboratories, but he's definitely seen as like a minor character. And there's so much, I feel like he's not forgotten, but people kind of cast him aside. And that's crazy to me because he was doing so much. You know?
Well, it's crazy how someone's social life can have such a big impact on their professional life, which is could be absolutely amazing, but they screw like the wrong person, and they're all
literally,
of a sudden
literally
right. Yeah.
In this case,
oops, sorry, I thought you were someone else. Yeah.
Too many persons.
This story, there's only one person who's actually smarter than him in the entire story. One guy is better at science than him and depends on the topic. Out of everybody in this entire story, that's insane.
Wait, who are you identifying as that?
Well, I'll get him now. His name is Hsu Shenzhen of China. He was part of, yes. I don't want to give too much of what he is.
Yeah.
But that general, we'll talk about him later. I don't want to say what group he was part of yet. But believe it or not, that man was intelligent. Without his mathematics, he did all the math for all of them. Right. He's so smart.
Well, that was like the crazy.
But then FBI screwed him over because they didn't think he was a loyal American. Right. And they kept him in jail for like 5 years for no reason. Then they made him go back to China where he was considered an enemy of the state. So then, you know, if we wouldn't die while back in China, he made missiles for Chairman Mao. The missiles that we were still afraid of in 2017, this guy invented in the early, late 40s, early 50s. This guy was so intelligent, we made him an enemy of America. And then he went over there and made the weapons we're still afraid of.
He got brought back. Did you realize that?
No.
Yeah, we brought him back.
But it was too late by then.
Well, we'll talk more about it, but they ended up, like, needing him for some of the war effort. And they brought him... We'll have to scroll.
Isn't that crazy?
43 is when they brought him back.
Isn't that crazy to think about how they're like, okay, this guy's a huge danger to everybody in our country, but we need him now for this one thing. So we're going to bring him back and hope that he doesn't, you know, do terrible things to us, but we'll, you know, we'll pay him probably all of this money, right, that we don't have to pay him. And it's just crazy, man. It's like,
yeah, it is.
Enemy of the state, get out of our country. You're crazy. We hate you. Oh, wait, come back. We need you. It's like that. It's like a toxic relationship. You know what I mean?
Right? Yes. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing, too, actually, is when we get to that part, we're also going to talk very briefly about a rubber company that is a part of some of the research that I've done. And to have them pop up, it was kind of a similar situation with not that company in particular, but some of the research they were working on. Prior to the internment of Japanese Americans, a lot of them were working on research around Wiuli, which is a desert plant from the Chichihuahua Desert that the entire plant can be processed into rubber. Like, it secretes rubber, basically. And this one guy, I think he was from Caltech, he fought for the people that were interred to still be able to work on Wiuli research. And there's, like, all kinds of cool pictures of them doing that.
We should excuse me, guys. I've been sick, but I'm going to make it through this tonight. Okay, who wants to start at the beginning?
I'm ready. I have many notes on this.
Go for it, Jamie.
Lead
the way.
I'm doing my Rocky stance right now.
But we meant we meant Rocky Balboa, not Rocky as in Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I meant Rocky and Bullwinkle. I don't.
I know.
I definitely did not mean Rocky Balboa. Oh,
yeah. So give us the Eye of the Flying Squirrel. Go ahead.
I am ready. With the Eye of the Flying Squirrel. And so one of the things that we should say really quick is, like, we're going to talk about some famous and infamous people that we're going to cover in our next episode. So we're not going to gloss over them, but we're not going to go into a ton of detail because we're going to
realistically
there's so much detail about them later because there's too much.
There's almost 4 different episodes we can do to connect to this.
Yeah,
episode.
There really is. Yes.
Right. You could do a show on probably each person, you know?
We could do, yeah, for sure. And I think that's kind of our plan.
Two of the people and 3 of the cults.
Yeah. Yes. So just to start us off, he was involved with Aleister Crowley. He had extensive correspondence with him. We'll talk a lot about him. He'll pop up a whole lot more. He actually never met him in person, which fascinates me endlessly. And then, of course, he also knew L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, among, like I said, other notable figures. He was one of the principal founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, still in existence today, still producing rockets, still doing all kinds of stuff, and the Aerojet Engineering Corporation. We'll talk more about both of those. He invented the first rocket engine to use a castable composite rocket propellant and pioneered the advancement of both solid and liquid rocket fuels. I'm going to be super honest. I totally nerded out over the rocket aspects of this because I'm pretty familiar with his life in the occult and love all that part, but I totally got super nerdy about rockets.
I noted out about the other part.
Can I add something real quick?
Yeah,
before you continue on with Jack Parsons. As teenagers, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I kind of wanted to see the correlation between him and Wernher von Braun.
Yes.
And
do you guys have anything on that? You want me to wait, hold back?
Go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead. I am going to talk more about him, but I want to hear whatever you have to say.
So I'm like you, Jamie. I love rocketry, and I'm a sci-fi nerd, and I love all the stuff that comes along with it.
Jake.
Yeah, the
Yeah. Well, I got interested, and I wonder if they knew each other, and it turns out they did. When they were teenagers, they had a correspondence and they would trade notes and ideas and tips and experiments and all sorts of things. So that's in the 20s, right? That's when they were teenagers, before they were adults, before von Braun went into the army, you know, in Germany and all that stuff. So is that interesting? Like they knew each other.
Yeah.
That
it's
is
amazing. Really
when they were,
it's amazing.
When they were teenagers. So,
anyway, and it's like, how would they even, you know, there was no internet. There was no like, you know,
right,
group chat for rocket science. It's like
a Mellon rocket club.
No, it was probably through like a sci-fi novel type of club. I bet you something had to do with science fiction stuff.
Yes, it was through the sci-fi, but because almost all the original people that were big time rocket nerds all were into sci-fi, so they started forming like model rocket clubs.
Right,
right,
and they kept writing back and forth.
But the 1920s, you got a guy in Germany and a guy in Pasadena, California, and they're like call each other on the phone as teenagers. You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's wild.
Now,
and that was one thing.
No, don't say sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
Question: before I say it, are you going to bring up their correspondence in World War II? If so, I will say it now.
No, I'm not going to bring that up.
Go ahead.
What's funny in World War II? Because also Ed Foreman. At this point, Foreman and Parsons both were writing with Wernher von Braun. And then they realized Wernher von Braun would never say anything to them about what he was doing, but always asking them questions. He was kind of stuck at a point. He was trying to get the American ideas for Germany to get ahead of America.
Sure.
Hoping they would slip up in the letters.
See, that's the thing that I think is so interesting in his life, is sometimes I feel like because he was living... He wasn't living this dual life. I feel like in Jack Parsons' mind, his life was perfectly harmonious. Like, he saw the interconnection of occultism and science and his work and his life, but everyone outside of him seems to feel like they were at odds. And I feel like in some ways, they don't come out and say it, but they almost kind of... I don't know how to put it. They almost talk about him like he was in a deficit in some way. Like he was lacking because he wasn't fully,
jealousy.
Yes, definitely. And I think people have a hard time seeing people have duality in them like that see. He saw the interconnectedness of everything and other people don't. And so there's some jealousy and there's kind of like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But when you like, start really thinking about his life, so much of it was very carefully planned.
Yes.
And I'll get more into that because I really see where he had a lot of foresight that kind of kept him safe later in life. It did come back to bite him a little bit, but during like the highest points of his career, he had enough foresight to keep himself from getting blacklisted because he was so careful in how he did his social life, you know?
Are you saying he just kept himself grounded? I was going to get that in, damn it.
He transcends needing to be grounded in my mind.
No, I think all that was jealousy, though, because they did find out now most rocket scientists overall in this time period also went into science fiction and the occult. So I think a lot of these guys who acted like they were offended by it, it was just a way of trying to get ahead of him.
Yeah, that's what I think is so interesting, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more in other episodes, but occultism was like, it was crossing so many barriers of people who are interested in science and art and like combining all of them together, and I am just so fascinated by all of that.
Well, in the 1940s, it was huge. There were different versions of religions and cults springing up all over the place. I mean, it was a thing. It was like almost a fad in the 40s.
Just like it's kind of becoming a fad again in a different way. Not so much these like cults and like these actual religions, but like people getting more into like spirituality and crystals, and everyone's kind of witchy, you know, without having the framework of, say, a cult, for example. So I did like kind of dig into Jack's life, and he was actually born Marvel Whiteside Parsons, named after his father. He shared his father's first name, and Whiteside was actually his mother's maiden name. He was born the 2nd of October, 1914, at Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles to Ruth Virginia Whiteside and Marvel H. Parsons. At home, he was known, huh?
So what amazing names.
Right? At home, he was known as Jack, and his parents actually divorced less than a year later, in March of 1915, because Ruth discovered his father was in cahoots with prostitutes.
nice rhyme.
Thanks. She actually forbade him from contacting Jack and started calling her son John. But despite that, friends and family still knew him as Jack throughout his life.
And you know, the harassment was so bad, his dad had to move out east.
Yes. Yeah. So they moved to Los Angeles shortly before Jack was born, like about a year before he was born, from Massachusetts. And then he moved back.
Well, people don't know is he actually had another son that's illegitimate. And Jake's too shy to admit this. He's humble. That son is Jake's grandfather. That is Jack off Parsons.
I am never too shy to admit that, my friend. I think that was probably the most sarcasm I've ever heard Bill spew. That I'm humble.
I just would want to say you're the son of Jack off Parsons our afternoon.
Damn. Jack did actually have a half-brother from his father's second marriage. His name was Charles, unfortunately, not Jackoff. But Jack and Charles only met once in Jack's life at least. In both their lives. God, that was dumb.
Todd, to get good help.
Who edits this thing?
Todd.
Good on you, Todd. Good on you, man. I know it. I know. I feel your pain, brother.
Oh, he's leaving all that in. He's leaving all that in, and we know it. So, with their marriage falling apart, Ruth's parents, Walter and Carrie Whiteside, moved out to California as well to be close to their daughter and grandson. And the Whitesides were actually very wealthy, and they purchased... insanely wealthy. They purchased a home on Orange Grove Boulevard in Pasadena, known locally as Millionaire's Mile.
Which... Do you know who his neighbors were?
No, I didn't get that.
The direct name was Adolphus Bush, as in, you know, Bush alcohol.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
No. And I forget, one of the other neighbors was someone else equally rich.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, literally, that neighborhood had so much money that... In today's money, I'm not sure if we could really comprehend how much it is. They'd be that one percentile.
Right. Damn, that's crazy. So even though his parents are, well, his grandparents are insanely wealthy and taking care of him and his mother, money doesn't buy friends, unfortunately. And Parsons lived...
It doesn't buy good friends.
It doesn't buy good friends. Yeah. That's true.
they did try to buy a friends.
True.
On his first day of school. Did you know that?
No.
They hired him a permanent driver. They hired someone whose only job was to take him back and forth to school.
Of course.
They were so out of touch with reality. But this is like, he was 14, I think, at this point. So this is like 1928. Think of 1928. They handed him $20 for whatever we had to buy it on the day at class.
Interesting.
I can't imagine. I think you wouldn't give your kid $20 today to go to school, let alone back in 1928.
Right? That's like $100 now.
Yeah. Rich people problems.
Rich people
problems. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
They did kind of try to buy his friends.
Well, it wasn't that successful.
No.
He lived a solitary childhood, and he spent a lot of time reading and was super interested in mythology, Arthurian legend, and Arabian Nights. Author Jules Verne sparked his interest in science fiction, and he was a keen reader of pulp magazines like Amazing Stories, and these are what led to his interest in early rocketry. And some say that he actually dealt with undiagnosed dyslexia and was bullied, and which I could get behind that, because sometimes hearing about his life, I also wonder if he wasn't dealing with like ADHD, which, you know, as we know, lots of super smart people are dealing, you know, stuff like that going on. What?
$20 in 1928 would be like you had your kid $338.14 in 2022. Wow.
Even more than 100.
Wow. And you know, science fiction wasn't even called science fiction yet.
What
were they calling it? I can't remember.
It was something strange. But I'm trying to think. I listened to that while driving, so I couldn't write it down. I cannot find their name for it. But that word was not used until after the 1920s.
By Hugo Gernsback. Look it up.
Interesting.
So if one of you guys have Todd or Jake have a cool fact, now's a good time to say it while we try to find this again.
Yeah, while we look this up.
I thought it was really cool. We were talking about Wernher von Braun earlier. Mm-hmm. This guy named Richard Metzger said that Wernher von Braun, who was nicknamed the father of rocket science, once argued that Parsons was more worthy of that title than he was. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. That is interesting.
That is interesting.
So everybody knows, for those of you that don't know, Wernher von Braun is a rocket scientist from Nazi Germany that we ended up taking along with many other scientists in something called Project Paperclip, which we won't even get into that. At the end of World War II, we got all these scientists, and he was one of them. And he is a brilliant rocket scientist, and he gave us the V2 and what else, I forget. But for those of you that don't know, that's Wernher von Braun. Apparently, is how you pronounce it.
Oh, sorry. I gave you the West Virginia accent.
Well, I just found that out today. So
okay.
I was calling him Braun for years.
I've always heard of him being associated with, you know, like NASA and rockets, and like that's how we got to the moon and all this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until we started like diving into this topic that I found out that Parsons was, you know, so instrumental in all of this. And so when I read that, I was like, wow, that's kind of quite the statement, you know?
Yeah, it would be Brown. Yeah. Brown is how you'd say it. That AU makes like a weird, it's not a weird sound, but yeah, Brown.
Okay. I found it. It was up until 1920s, it was called Scientific Romance.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I like that. Bring that back. Bring that back. I want it to be called that.
I do too, yeah. Another interesting thing I want to say in regards to this is science fiction magazines have been published in Germany before they came into the English language. They actually came into the English language through Amazing Stories in about 1926. So that's another kind of interesting connection.
Hmm. So which means they were him and Wernher were reading the same stuff.
Yeah.
More than likely.
And they were only a couple years apart in age. I think Parsons was only 2 years younger than von Braun.
Yes. Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, so sorry, go back into the fact is, okay, you said he was going to school and had no friends.
Yeah, going to school, no friends. And he was bullied for his upper class upbringing. And some say that he was perceived as being kind of effeminate, and that added to him yes. getting bullied. And during this time, he befriended Edward Foreman, who would be his friend throughout the rest of his life. It was so interesting to me that Ed Foreman's one of the few people associated with Parsons that didn't have a Wikipedia article, which you guys know I'm super into editing Wikipedia. And he was a brilliant machinist, and he supported Parsons throughout his life. They were always friends and colleagues. And
up to Parsons' death.
Up till his death. Brilliant machinist, and I'm probably going to write a Wikipedia article about
it. You know how they became friends?
Do it.
They shared an interest in science fiction and rocketry.
Yes, but do you know what? You know how they first introduced?
No.
The kids on the school were beating the crap out of Parsons very badly in a circle. I mean, they were beating him badly, like they did every day. Foreman saw this and how much smaller he was than them. He was a very big kid for his age. He walked over and beat the crap out of him and broke his nose and helped Jack up.
Oh, yeah.
I almost said the wrong way. they became instant friends because Jack realized this guy is my bodyguard.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if you had this, you know, at the same time this is going on, Jack's first mix or dance with magic and like dark magic was at this time. He did his very first magic spell in middle school, trying to invoke the devil. Did you
go
see
ahead and
that?
Talk more about that.
I did see that.
He actually tried to invoke the devil, hoping making a deal with the devil that him and I think at this point Foreman would make it to space in exchange for Jack's soul.
Amazing.
And whatever happened is Jack truly believed the devil did come into his bedroom that night, and he actually took a step back from all magic, mystical stuff, all that entire interest section of his left.
For got you. Too real, huh? Got too
yeah,
real.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever yeah. happened, it scared him good.
In his writings, he said the devil did come down that night, and he was so scared he tried to go straight.
Interesting.
Well, it's not so surprising those interests align, right? Science fiction and fantasy or magic. It's all kind of encompassing.
Yeah.
And he totally felt like science explained magic.
Yes.
Through quantum physics, he felt like science explained magic.
Oh, let's go there.
Oh, because yeah. you know why? Because we're in a simulation.
Yeah. Let's go quantum physics.
We should talk.
Just kidding. Let's not.
No, not
someday. Someday. Not today.
Okay. Well, we'll have Jake
Jake's
back.
Jake's finding reasons to come back.
And yeah. we'll talk more about quantum physics then. No, 1928, the two began engaging in rocket experiments using gunpowder, and they adopted the Latin motto, per aspera ad astra, through hardship to the stars, which I love that. That's rad.
Hey, remember, he only said through hardship because this is only 2 years after he tried to make a deal with the devil. I think that's so crazy that age.
You know, through selling your soul to the devil, to the stars. they conducted their experiments in Arroyo Seco Canyon and the Parson family backyard, which they left marred with craters from their test failures. And they incorporated items like cherry bombs. They used glue as a binding agent to increase the rocket fuel stability. They used aluminum foil to make the gunpowder easier to cast. So, really,
you know what the problem was using the backyard.
What?
They were next to our golf course too, and it was up. There was multiple complaints because of damage being done and the sound level. That was on one of the documentaries that golfers were complaining.
And those complaints would plague him the rest of his career.
I absolutely
Which
love
we'll
that
talk
part.
More about.
Oh, I love it.
That, you know, like two young boys out in the family garden just blowing shit up.
Right.
And I am all for this. Like, it reminds
me
of my childhood. Yeah.
Okay, right? Yeah. This is what happens when minds don't have iPads.
Right. It's
absolutely.
You know?
And right.
Brilliant.
Think how much money they had to go through fireworks on 7 days a week like this.
But his parents are his grandparents are loaded.
Yeah.
They gave him $300 for the first day of school. They're fine.
I bet anytime they gave him school money, he's just like hoarding it.
Yes.
To buy gunpowder later for, you know, more experiments.
That's true. $20 back then. Gunpowder was probably, you know, 10 cents.
Right? Exactly.
Also, the fact that a young child can just go buy gunpowder. How awesome is that, right?
And he started working in a gunpowder factory in high school.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
just taking it home in his pockets.
He totally stole stuff from the Hercules company, which we'll talk more about. I'm getting there.
Are we going to talk about military school at all?
Yeah, I got a little bit.
Okay, I'll go ahead then.
Let me do my funky thing. sorry. In 29, he began attending John Muir High School, and you'll see this too throughout his life. The dude struggled with academics. He was still friends with Foreman. He participated in fencing and archery, but totally sucked at school. So his mom sent him to Brown Military. Huh?
It's because he didn't care about it.
Well, yeah, of course. And like I said, that comes up throughout his whole life. Like, the dude never had a college degree because he just didn't care. Because
he's a mad scientist.
I think what happens is when you're at such an intelligence level, you're completely bored with the stuff they're trying to teach all the idiots. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's
why I'm bored today. I'm kidding.
Shut up. That's why I think he might have been dealing with dyslexia on top of that, because it totally makes sense. He's kind of all over the place. He doesn't care about this stuff. Like, I totally see it. I totally get it. But that's the interesting thing, too. He goes to another school that's run unconventionally and does amazing, which I thought that was interesting. But they, of course, played to his strengths. Like, he wasn't put into a structured curriculum. They kind of let him do, what was that? You guys are making so many sounds. I am offended. His mom sent him to Brown Military Academy for boys in San Diego, from which he was expelled for blowing up the toilets.
Yeah, you know how many toilets he blew up? All of them. I love that fact. I thought he blew up a toilet originally, and one of the documentaries goes, no.
It was all of them.
All the toilets. And he's like, yeah, I did it. What are you going to do about it? I love that.
So yeah, that's awesome.
At this point, we're getting into the Great Depression. The white side fortune is dwindling and never recovers, basically. And this is when he starts at the unconventional university school. And he flourished there. His interest in chemistry was fostered by the instructors, many of whom had attended California Institute of Technology, Caltech, which we'll mention that over and over and over. And while he was there, he also took an interest in writing. He was the editor of the school newspaper, won an award for literary excellence. And as his family's financial situation continued to get worse, he took a weekend job at the Hercules Powder Company. And that he learned a bunch about explosives from there, of course, and saw the connection of the use of explosives and rocket propulsion. And
you know, every time someone says Hercules, I think, Hercules.
Right?
I know. Why do we have to grow up in that era, for Christ's sakes?
Yeah.
It's never going to leave my head. It's got like a
little... Right?
Yeah, it never will. Of course, he and Foreman, in their spare time, they're still studying rockets. They're still building and testing different rockets and models, sometimes using materials stolen from Hercules. And they soon constructed a solid fuel rocket engine. And during this time, they're corresponding with Robert Goddard, Hermann Oberth, Konstantin Tislakovsky, Willy Ley, and Werner von Braun.
Willy Ley, if he gets a chance.
And Parsons and von Braun spoke on the phone for hours about their research, and they would compare rocketry trends, like Jake was mentioning, in their home countries, or at least von Braun was trying to see what rocketry trends were going on in the United States. He graduated in 1933. And continued to pursue his interest in literature. He also wrote a lot of poetry. He and rocketry, of course. He enrolled in Pasadena Junior College to study physics and chemistry, but was forced to drop out and take a permanent job at Hercules again because his family's fortune is basically gone.
You know, the poetry is how he get women.
Yes.
He was kind of like the Pepe Le Pew of his time. He'd kind of hit on be really smooth and keep bringing them poems and stuff.
I mean, I'd be into it. He could write me a poem and then tell me about rockets, and I would have been done for.
Yeah. rockets and orgies, you're in.
He could leave out that part. Hercules sent him to their manufacturing plant, which was in Hercules, California, on San Francisco Bay. And during this time, he started having headaches because of exposure to nitroglycerin. He saved his money, hoping to continue his studies in chemistry at Stanford, but, of course, couldn't afford the tuition.
Which is sick, because his family lost more money and they had to move.
And that was one thing. They moved so much that I kind of stopped tracking it, but they kept having to move and moved to smaller and smaller houses and you know.
Yeah, it gets confusing because at one point they somehow got a big house again, but it never explains how they got it again.
Right.
So at what point is he at Caltech?
Right. Technically never. Right now. Well, he never attended Caltech. So I'm going to explain how he gets associated with Caltech right now. In 34, Parsons and Forman realize that they want to get at the resources that Caltech has. And in order to do this, and this is where I'm talking about, like, this man had foresight. He knew. He's like looking around and he's like very strategic to get what he wants. So in order to get to those resources, they attend a lecture by Eugene Sanger, a rocket engineer, and William Bollet, a PhD student specializing in rocket-powered aircraft. The pair approach Bollet, expressing interest in designing a liquid-fuel rocket, and Bollet redirected them to fellow PhD student Frank Molina. And Frank Molina is going to pop up all the time because the three of them are kind of this string throughout the rest of Parsons' life, basically, or at least until... Well,
they're JPL, right? I mean, isn't Molina a big part of that? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, which, spoiler alert, Molina is a part of getting Parsons and Forman out of JPL so they can take on when they decide to sell to the rubber company during the war.
It's not that he hates them. He thinks they're not serious enough.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't hate them. And you see, like, they do have a good friendship. Molina just doesn't appreciate their work ethic and their,
all the sex orgies.
Molina doesn't appreciate a good orgy, doesn't want to masturbate. No.
That was seriously one of his complaints at one point.
No, I know.
What's wrong with Molina? God, come on, man. Get with the program, bud.
At one point, almost every secretary at JPO had slept with both Forman and Parsons, and most have participated in orgies with them.
Well, if Molina's you can get it.
What a time. Drunk.
Right?
I live in the wrong time.
What a world. Yeah. What a world.
Rockets, science, and orgies? Like, come on.
Now, who gets to say the core nickname?
I'm getting there.
I'm excited.
I am excited, too. I know. For those that don't know, I'm very much I like to have a plan and then follow that plan. And then if we get off that plan, I'm going to get mad. Just kidding.
I'm a fan of chaos.
You are a fan of chaos. So Molina was a mathematician and mechanical engineer writing a thesis on rocket propulsion and realized that they had a lot of common interests and he befriended them. And Molina, along with Parsons and Forman, applied for funding from Caltech together, and they made sure that they didn't mention that their ultimate objective was developing a rocket for space exploration. And this mostly because at the time, the scientific field considered such ideas still a part of science fiction only, not a legitimate field of study. Initially, they were rebuffed by Clark Blanchard Milliken, but Molina, who was, I think, head of the department, I don't remember what his role was exactly, but Molina's doctoral advisor, Theodore von Karaman, who we'll talk more about him too, really yes. cool guy, he saw promise in their proposal and agreed to allow them to operate under the university's Guggenheim Aeronautical Laboratory, or GAUSET, another thing that we'll mention a lot. And they called themselves the GAUSET Rocket Research Group. Is that the nickname you wanted, Bill, or are you thinking of another one?
The other one.
Same the Suicide one. Squad.
That's the right. Suicide Squad.
The OG Suicide Squad.
Yeah, the original.
The original Suicide Squad. These guys' experiments were so dangerous, I wouldn't expect them to die, which is why they couldn't do experiments on campus.
And what was interesting was they really didn't get hurt very often. Because there's one that I'll talk about more later where...
They didn't get hurt very often because of Hush Wynn.
Well, there was one where, like, the engine exploded and created shrapnel, and it didn't hit any of them. And, like, everyone's like, what? Von Karaman's into it, and I hope I'm saying his name right. Von Karaman, that was how I saw it when I was looking at the pronunciation key. So they did gain access to Caltech specialty equipment, but because of the Depression, he wasn't able to finance them. So again, another part of their life is basically Jack Parsons and Foreman trying to get money to afford what they need.
Now, besides Von Kierman liking the fact is how hard they were willing to work, do you know what other connection him and Jack had?
Not.
Von Kierman was also into mysticism. He just didn't talk about it usually, but he bragged to the students. Von Kierman was a descendant of Rabbi Judah Loh Ben Bezalel, who in the old days, he's one of the most important people in Judaic studies when it comes to mysticism. Mm-hmm. And according to legends, he is the man who created the golem, which he created life and put it into clay and made a giant living protector for the Jewish people. The belief in that was so powerful that Hitler was still afraid of it, and they thought they knew where it was at. He would make the troops be careful around that synagogue so they wouldn't wake the golem up.
Damn.
That's crazy.
That's amazing.
So that's how important this guy's family was in Judaism.
That's amazing, yeah. Within their group, each one focused on their distinct skills. Parsons was the chemist, Foreman was the machinist, and Molina was the technical theoretician. Molina, and I feel like this very aptly describes how he feels about Parsons, says that Parsons lacked the discipline of higher education, but he had an uninhibited and fruitful imagination. And Parsons and Foreman were, they were eager to try anything and everything, and Molina insisted upon having some scientific discipline. But the creativity of the other two kind of made Molina think outside the box. And even though, he would keep them disciplined, they really pushed Molina kind of out of his comfort zone.
It says that they kept him building actual rocket engines, not just solving equations on paper.
Yes. Yeah. Because he totally wanted to keep it all theoretical. And they were like, fuck no, we're doing the
right
real thing.
Yeah. So it was like the perfect little grouping, like
it really was.
Biggest battle in the scientific community is experimental versus
theoretical.
Thank you, God. I think the biggest battle in the science universe is that fight between theoretical and experimental.
Totally. And I think part of that is because if you're a theorist, you don't necessarily want it to become real because your theory could be proven wrong. And I think a lot of that discourse between the two is very much an ego thing. If you're a theorist, you don't really want to see if it's real or not, but you should, because that's the whole point,
Right. If you're a real scientist, that's the reason, right? You want it to either be proved or disproved.
Exactly.
Right.
Not to mention, he didn't want them to be smarter than him. If they would have succeeded on that, some ways they might, maybe he feel they wouldn't need him.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Molina
always tried to keep him grounded. Wasn't
but they were also like teaching each other, because Molina was teaching them about scientific procedure and safety, and they were teaching him about practical rocketry and the basics of it.
I don't think they wanted to know the safety, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think they did either. they spent a lot of time smoking marijuana together and drinking, and Molina and Parsons actually wrote a semi-autobiographical science fiction screenplay that they planned to pitch, which included anti-capitalist and pacifist themes.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's just like, you know, a night with the good old boys, you know?
Right.
Sitting around the fire, like, drinking, smoking, like talking about some cool ideas you had, you know?
Right. And that's what I think is like so cool with him is like Parsons doesn't really have some underlying ideology that he's trying to push forward. Like, he truly just wants people to live and do their own thing and be
right. Curious. There's no agenda.
Yeah, he has no agenda at all.
He wants people to live and do their thing.
Yeah,
this is starting to sound like you're getting into some other
sex.
Stuff.
Yeah, it totally does.
Do what that will, you mean?
with Mr. Crowley.
Yeah. Right. Yes. So, 34, Parsons meets Helen Northrup, and he would marry her in the following year. They moved into a house in Pasadena, and Parsons took a job with the explosives manufacturer Halifax Powder Company at their Saugus facility. He, of course, spent most of his money funding the rocket research group and manufacturing, and he would also manufacture nitroglycerin from their home for extra money. And he would do that throughout his life. When he needed extra money, he would start manufacturing nitroglycerin.
It's just insane, right?
Right. Like, and that would ultimately be part of his downfall.
Yeah.
And you know what else he'd make at home for extra fun and money?
What?
Absinthe. And I think it was methamphetamine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was distilling alcohol, too. Yeah. And every house that he moves to, he constructs a laboratory in there somewhere. Usually in like a laundry room or the basement or a porch.
When you're like him, they don't call it a laboratory. I think it's called a laboratory. I've seen
It would be
I've seen enough
laboratory. Yeah. he even pawned Helen's engagement ring at one point.
Yeah.
I thought that was,
that's the least of things he did to her.
Right?
Hey, it's for the cause, man. It's for the cause, man.
That's the thing that I thought was interesting. Like, Helen's not really hurt by the crap that he does. In fact, she's kind of into it in her own way.
Benefits from this overall.
Yeah. Yeah. In the end, she ends up coming out okay, which I think is so interesting.
She comes out better than
most other people in this story.
Yeah. it's very soon. Are we going to explain who she ends up with and all that?
Oh yeah, I got it all, Bill.
I know. So, I'm sure you do. I just wanted to make sure.
So even though he's having these money troubles, his work with the Gallset team super important to him. Parsons and Forman were keen to launch model rockets, but now Molina wants them to focus first on building a static rocket mower, a static rocket mower. That would be amazing. And dangerous. A static rocket motor before continuing to rocket building, which they agree to. Molina's in touch with Goddard at this time. He goes and visits him at Roswell. But Goddard was not interested in collaborating or sharing his research, mostly because he had been subjected to widespread derision for his work in rocketry. Instead, at this time, they start acquiring a bunch of people helping them. They have Apollo M.O. Smith, Carlos Woods, Mark Muir Mills, which all these people are well known in their various disciplines, Fred Miller, William Rockefeller, and Rudolf Schott. His pickup is what they use to transport their equipment back and forth. Their first liquid fuel motor test. Not the smartest,
but he was the necessary one.
Yeah.
That would have been my part. I had the truck. Right? That's my part. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes.
I'm
pretty sure that, yeah. There's also a photographer. Yeah. That would have been me. I would have been their archivist, keeping track of everything.
I'd show up with the beer. Like, right.
If Todd's got the beer, I got the truck. Jamie's got the camera.
I'm there for the sex. I'm there for the sex magic.
Oh, I would have had the biggest glasses too. My glasses already take up a lot of my face. Like half my face would have just been glasses at this time.
Bill shows up wearing nothing but toe shoes.
Yes.
Nice callback, bud. I love it.
If you went to the OG, Jamie, your face would have been glazed, not glassed.
Oh man. So
Jesus. Holy damn. Crap. All right, here we go.
I told you you would come up with a joke about me.
You know what? I'm putting my fucking pants back on.
I never had pants on. Let's seal the deal right there. Intention of putting them on.
This is a 3-day week. I'm not putting pants on.
Yeah. I honestly wore a dress today just so I wouldn't have to wear pants.
Nice.
I just want to put on too, one thing. I don't want to put on multiple things. Yeah, Todd and I coordinated our dresses today.
Yeah.
We were talking about how to best take care of them when you're washing them too.
Mine has pockets.
Okay.
Mine does too. Mine has four pockets. So
that's where we put the funny thing is,
in my pocket.
How to dry a dress was a legit topic.
It was. So Halloween 1936, their first liquid fuel motor test takes place in Devil's Gate Dam in the Aurora Secco. Parsons biographer. What?
Jamie, you can't tell me that was a coincidence. That right? Devil's Dam on Halloween night to do this.
Right? I want to read like his journal because I feel like he would be like, this was a synchronicity that I had to follow through with.
If I read Jack Parsons' journal, I'd want to wear gloves.
Yeah, same. I would want to read a reprinted version of it so I didn't have to think about where it had been and how many times it had been jizzed on.
Fuck, we'd all be Scientologists if we read that journal.
True.
We would convert right after reading it. Be like, holy shit, it's all true.
We'd skip this cowboy and go straight to Scientology.
Would we be Scientologists or would we be Thelemites? Or would we start our own weird Thelemite Scientology hybrid baby? Well,
we should definitely talk about that in another episode because that's a whole Thelemite to Excalibur to Scientology.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a little bit on that.
We could
dip it in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get there. I promise I'm going to talk more about the other stuff. I told you, I just got really into the rockets. In John Carter's biography.
Is that a phallic joke, Bill?
sorry, I was being a dick.
There's always phallic jokes. Always. So,
yeah, it's usually inside Bill's pants.
It's true.
Come on, Jamie, you can get this out. I know it's a mouthful, but you can do this.
God damn it. So, this is how the experiment or the rocket's described. So, they took three attempts to fire the rocket. Or, I'm sorry, where am I at? Hold on. Sorry.
Indiana, right?
I am in Indiana. Exactly.
Okay.
This is a description of the experiment. They took their first three attempts to fire the rocket failed. On the fourth, the oxygen line accidentally ignited and perilously billowed fire at the group. But they didn't view this as a failure. They viewed it as formative, and they continued their experiments throughout the last quarter of 36. And after the final test was successfully completed in January 1937, von Kierman agreed that they could perform future experiments at an exclusive rocket testing facility on campus. So at this point, they proved themselves. Nice. And then 37 is when Hsieh Hsien Tsien, I don't know how to say his name, Bill. I think you said it way better than I did. this is when he joins the group. And Wald Arnold joins. He's a laboratory assistant, but he becomes the group's photographer. And the reason Arnold held this position was because he provided a donation to the group on behalf of an anonymous benefactor.
I should point out,
discover who that anonymous benefactor was, but I'm curious.
No one has actually. Around this time, I believe, is when he starts going to the OTO, the Order of the Temple.
Yeah. Orienter. Yes. Yep. Getting there. Getting ready to talk, because we also have to talk about.
That'd be a great gamer awesome. Tag. That's my new gamer tag. Anonymous benefactor. Anonymous benefactor.
It is great. The other interesting thing that happens at this time is Person sets himself up as a scientific expert despite his lack of university training, because he appears as an expert explosives witness. Sorry, I'm getting really excited. In the trial of Earl Kinnett, the head of police intelligence in Los Angeles, who had been accused of conspiring to set a car bomb off in the attempted murder of Harry Raymond, a former LAPD detective who was fired after whistleblowing against police corruption. And Kinnett was convicted largely on Parsons' testimony, during which he had reconstructed the bomb and its explosion.
And this would never come back to blow up in his face. Foreshadowing.
And at some point around this time, he enrolled in University of Southern California, but once again, never attended because he was too interested in his rocketry work. So,
Jesus, you're getting so excited.
I know. 38,
they construct... Go take a break, put a towel under your chair.
There's already one there. Don't worry about it. I came prepared.
Clearly you came.
Working on
reality. Glad I showed up. Thanks for inviting me, guys. I didn't know it was going to be that kind of a party.
What I tell you, I told you this wouldn't be for you. You fit in.
So, sorry. Oh, damn.
Light a cigarette in a minute here.
In 38, they construct their static rocket mower and increased burn time from 3 seconds to over a minute. And Parsons is invited to lecture on rocketry to a chapter of the Los Angeles Science Fiction League. He never joined it, but would occasionally attend talks and at some point chatted with a young Ray Bradbury. I had to squeeze that in there.
Who
I didn't even know Ray Bradbury was part of this spider web.
Yes.
So and so just is Robert Heinlein.
But he's in there. Say that's that again, so cool. Sorry.
And Robert Heinlein too.
Yeah, yes. So I need to mention this because this comes back to haunt Parsons later, but at some point, Sidney Weinbaum, a Jewish refugee and vocal Marxist, that's an important part, joined the group, and between him, Parsons, Molina, and Tzian, they created a communist discussion group at Caltech, which operated secretly. Parsons was subscribed to the People's Daily World, which was like a leftist communist magazine, and he was a member of the American Civil Liberties Union, which was considered leftist at the time.
Yes.
However, he refused to join the Communist Party, which caused a break with Weinbaum. And again, this is where I think he had like some foresight, realizing I shouldn't take it that far, you know?
Well, not to mention, he wanted to be rich off of this. He wanted capitalism.
True. Well, he wanted capitalism so he could go to the moon, because I think he knew that money meant that's how I get to the moon. That's how I get out in the space, you know? And by the late 30s, the need for paid employment and some ideological breaks like that with Weinbaum reduced the Suicide Squad back to the three original founders. And this is where 39 Parsons is introduced to the Church of Thelema, a Western esoteric and occult spiritual philosophy founded in the early 1900s by Aleister Crowley, an English writer, mystic, occultist, and ceremonial magician. So, guys, we went on so long with our episode on Jack Parsons. Let's be honest, it was my fault.
I was going to say, we went on?
Freaking out about Rockets, and I'm still freaking out about Rockets. I was telling the guys today that I was still reading up on Jack Parsons. We decided to make a double feature about him because our original episode was over 2.5 hours long. And it's mostly just me talking about Rockets. with some mention of all the sex and orgies that sex-thusiast Jack Parsons was into.
It's going to be a great couple episodes. So we really hope you guys enjoy and understand us creating two out of one.
Yeah, thanks, guys. So real quick, check out our friend Mandy over at Monster Bob Decals on Etsy. You can use the code STRANGE for 10% off. We do have a shirt up over there that you can buy directly from her, and she'll print it and send it to you, and she's got a lot of great stickers. And then we also have our collaborator JR_1 on Twitch. Is that right, Bill? Did I get his name right?
JR_1 live, I believe.
Okay, JR_1
live. I need to write all these down because I can never remember.
Right?
That's why I just let you guys say it, because I'm like, I don't remember.
I'm wrong. JR1_live.
Oh, oops. JR1_live.
We've been sending everybody to some other guy.
I've been posting it in the group.
It's right in our show notes.
Yeah, I think.
I copy and paste the parts that we reuse.